Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to the Raiders Insider Podcast on CSNCalifornia.com. Introducing your host, Oakland Raiders Insider, Scott Baer.
Welcome, everyone, to this week's episode of the Raiders Insider Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Baer, and this week we have a very special guest who isn't a current Raiders player or a current Raiders coach. We got a chance to speak with Raiders legend Tom Flores, a former Raider quarterback, former Raiders offensive coordinator, and former Raiders head coach. And we talked to him about the glory days back in Oakland and what the atmosphere was like when the Raiders were absolutely rocking in the late 1970s. We talked to him about being the first minority head coach in the entire NFL. And of course, about the ridiculous notion that this man is not in the Hall of Fame. He did discuss this year's Raiders and his high hopes for this team, the possibility of the Raiders moving to Las Vegas, and what it was like when he was head coach when the Raiders moved from Oakland to Los Angeles in the early 1980s. So with no further ado, let's hear from Raiders legend Tom Flores. Our guest this week is former Raiders quarterback, former Raiders head coach, and current Raiders radio analyst Tom Flores. Tom, this current Raiders team sits at 4-2 after a tough loss to the Kansas City Chiefs. What have you seen and what have you learned from this team over the course of the first six games?
I think it's a pretty good team. I think it's on the verge of being able to compete in the playoffs. I don't know how far they would go in the playoffs because I'm not sure if they're ready yet, maturity-wise and talent-wise. But they're certainly good enough to make the playoffs when you look at the rest of the teams in the league. They're doing very well, and they're growing up.
Now, obviously, there's a lot of heat on this defense, which hasn't, played particularly well, especially when you go up against the Chiefs and you don't fare well. There's obviously going to be, some fans that are upset about that. Do you have any major concerns about this defense moving forward, or do you think that this is going to evolve and get better over time?
Well, I think it's going to get better, but I'm concerned about it because they seem to tighten it up pretty good after the first two or three games, and then all of a sudden last week they went back to some of their old weaknesses. And I'm not sure whether those weaknesses are just a matter of not doing the scheme or they're inept in ability. I think you want to think that they're good enough, but they just seem to be out of position too many times and give up. When you're out of position, you're giving up big plays and you're providing momentum. When you play Andy Reid and his teams, you better be ready for everything and you better be very disciplined.
Now, this team is going out to the East Coast, and they're going to stay in Florida between this Jacksonville and this Tampa game. Do you think that there are any positives to this team kind of being isolated and really kind of staying focused just on football over the course of that 10 days?
Well, there could be a positive and a negative, really, when you think about it, because I did that. We did that in the old days of American Football League. Well, we played three games on the East Coast. We'd stay back there for that duration. If you're a mature team, it should not be a factor. Use it to your advantage. If you're a very young team, then the mature guys, the veterans, which there are not a lot of old veterans on this team, they have to make sure that the guys stay focused their entire trip. But I don't think there's any problem. I think it's good. I think they're doing the right thing by keeping them back there. And for just a few more days between the two games, they'll get a little tighter, and maybe the unity grows a little bit more. And one thing, like I said earlier, this team is growing up before our very eyes.
Now, as a former
quarterback, as a well-respected offensive mind. What do you think of this kid, Derek Carr, over the course of his first three seasons? It really seems to me like he's becoming one of the NFL's best if he continues on this path.
I think so. I think he's improved. He still has some signs of youth. He's a little impatient sometimes. Every game he seems to start off a little jumpy, a little antsy to get started, a little jumpy and a little quick in his releases and decision making. And then he seems to get better as the game progresses. And obviously he's done very well in the fourth quarter. But that's his history. Fourth quarter comebacks, even in college. So, you know, I like the way he's going. He's certainly dedicated, very knowledgeable, very young.
Right.
Has a very live arm, able to throw the deep ball as well as the short balls, and he just has to grow to be more patient, and that comes with time. You see even some of the great ones. Aaron Rodgers is struggling right now a little bit. Yeah, so sometimes you have to go back to the playbook and you know, just relax a little bit, take a couple of deep breaths, and go from there.
As a former quarterback, do you find that there is a kinship with other guys that have done it? It just seems like such a complex position to be able to understand, that really only guys that have gone through it maybe truly get. And then also, when you were a head coach and you were an offensive coordinator, did you really bond with those guys and really kind of share a similar mind about how to approach this game?
I always did. I tried to, without getting too close, because you know you can't get too close and too personal. But you have to be close. You have to be in both of you have to be on the same page. You have to be in the same room, and you both have to be in the same huddle. And when I was coaching, I always put myself in the offensive huddle, and that's the way I thought. I was never on the phones for that reason. I just put myself in the huddle, and lived in the situation, in calling the plays, and. That's the way it is. I mean, that's the way you should be when you're a coordinator, and that's the way I was having played quarterback. That's the way I dealt with it.
You know, this fan base right now seems to be so excited for this team to have won some games and about the prospects of them going to the postseason for the first time in a long time. What was it like back then, especially in the East Bay? Like, was that whole fan base just really – you know, rallying around this team? Like, what was that environment like back when you guys were going to Super Bowls and you were one of the truly elite teams?
Oh, it's pretty magical. I mean, you know, this fan base, Raider Nation, as we're called, started years and years ago. But years and years ago, when I started, we were in San Francisco for the first couple of years until we came to Oakland. Then we didn't go into the Coliseum until 66. And, you know, but little by little, you know, the people where the team wasn't respected, and all of a sudden this team, wait a minute, these guys are getting pretty good. And pretty soon we were very good, and then pretty soon we were in the playoffs, and anything short of the playoffs was not acceptable by us and by our fans. So in one way we got spoiled, but in a way we were also, as a way of life, and it's you have to walk with a little, a little swagger. And you have to act like a champion and be a champion and live by it. And that all happened right here in little old Oakland, which is kind of sad to see that they might be moving away, really.
Yeah, and I was going to bring that up just with this whole Vegas prospect about moving a team. You went through a similar process when this team moved to Los Angeles. What was that experience like, kind of, you know, shifting everything, down south? Obviously, you guys did pretty well down there, but what was that experience like going from one spot to something brand new?
Well, it was just that. I mean, when we started the move, the team was getting kind of old. We had a lot of changes, we were on the verge of the playoffs, still on the verge of the playoffs, and then we did make the playoffs in '80, even though there was a threat then of moving, and we won the Super Bowl in '80 as a wild card. That was my second year as head coach. And then when we did move. You know, when you move as a player, you know, you have an you don't change much other than where you're practicing and where you're playing. You have all your friends are in that building.
Right.
As a family, it's entirely different because you have to move and create a new residence and schools if you're married and with children, and you know, your wife has to learn the neighborhood, or you have to know the social neighborhood. And so it's entirely different, and it depends on how mature you are as to how you take it. And nowadays, I don't know I think it's probably a little different in the minds of players nowadays because of all the movement anyway, just with free agency.
Right. Yeah. And what's your take on this, you know, prospect of possibly moving to, you know, to a different state, going to Vegas? I mean, obviously, this team needs a new home. Obviously, you know, Oakland Coliseum is not a place where you know, want to continue like with this franchise, but like, what do you think about the prospects of going there? Do you sort of understand where Mark is coming from yet also feel for these loyal Oakland fans?
Well, I think, you know, the Davis family and the ownership, of which there are several owners that you don't hear about, you know, Mark is, they're the general partners of the Davis family, and he's a spokesman for them. He's made it very clear that they don't want to move. They would prefer to stay. I think he would be more comfortable staying. I can't speak for him, but I think that's the way I feel. Mm-hmm. He's made that pretty clear, but he's also made it pretty clear that he doesn't have a choice. We can't exist in the Coliseum the way it is now. It's mm-hmm. falling apart. Structurally, it's falling apart. You've been in there. Mm-hmm. It's built in 66. Three of the worst stadiums in the National Football League, we're all in California.
Exactly.
There are only two. And it looks like San Diego's probably going to get theirs. And then there'll be us. I mean, that's just, you know, it's just, when you look around, there's Atlanta's on their third stadium, for crying out loud.
Right, so, yeah.
So we're still on our first. I mean, that's just, it's not acceptable in the National Football League. Having said that, I realize that Oakland also has an issue of money. It's not a wealthy, wealthy community tax-wise. But I think there are ways. There's still some land there that can be used to barter with that is owned by the city or by the county. And I'm not privy to everything that's going on.
Yeah, and I also had, you know, just that you are once again a modern era finalist for the Hall of Fame. Now, I know that there's been a number of Raiders where it's taken some time to get them in, Ray Guy and Kenny Stabler and things like that. Are you patient with this process, kind of feeling that eventually you will get your due? It seems like there's a lot of people in your corner. Like, how do you look at that, you know, as the years have gone by?
Well, I look at it as I'm realistic. I don't think it's a perfect system. There aren't too many perfect systems. It's a little flawed. Look when Joe Namath went in. There's some people that have gone in way before their time. I'm not saying they don't belong there, but there are others that should be there prior to that.
Right.
Consider that the way is the league. Are you still part of history of the league? And I'm very proud of what I've done. How I've done it, and those of us that were pioneers sometimes get lost in the shuffle.
Yeah, right. And was it a big deal back then when you were the first minority head coach? Was that a big deal to you? Was that a big deal in the area back when that hire was first made?
No, it wasn't because it wasn't as it wasn't pushed as or that much by the media, you know, the print people. It just happened, you know, and certainly Al Davis didn't make a big deal of it. A little later, he made a bigger deal out of hiring a woman than he did out of myself being the first Hispanic head coach, player, Super Bowl winner, which, all respect to women, that seemed to be a bigger issue. But yeah, that's another thing. So, you know, there are minorities and there are minorities, and we're all together. You know, you just like to get respect, and if you belong there, my feeling is if I belong in the hall, I will eventually get there. I just would like to do it while I'm still standing.
What are you most proud of from like from your head coaching tenure? Is it those Super Bowl rings? Is it the fact that you only lost 3 games in the playoffs ever? Is there anything that you're most proud of from that time?
Well, I don't know. I think the endurance. I coached 12 years as a head coach. I've been in the league all my life in one capacity or another. All my professional life. And I'm proud of that. I'm proud of just the history that I have in professional football. Having started out in a league that wasn't even supposed to exist and being one of the pioneers there and still being in the history books as one of only 20 that played the entire 10 years of the NFL, of the AFL, I should say. And so there's a lot of things involved in the history of football, and I was part of it. I'm proud of that. I'm proud of that. There are a lot of things you can take back on, keys here and there, games here and there. First wild card winner for many years, and you could reminisce all night long.
Right, and. And just because I'm from the Central Valley, I know that you are too. I was born in the town of Visalia. You're from Sanger/Fresno. How often do you get back to Tom Flores Field? How often do you see that?
Well, I was just here a couple of weeks ago.
Really? Oh, really?
We had a I have a foundation in my hometown of Sanger, and we sponsor a blood drive every year, of which Visalia. Is one of the stops by San Francisco and Sanger, and we were just there the day before we played San Diego. I was there for that Friday night football at Sanger. They were undefeated. They won their 6th game that night, which is kind of neat in itself. And then we had the blood drive, and Visalia is one of our stops. We have a great booster club in Visalia. It's a wonderful booster club.
Well, that's awesome. Well, Tom, thank you very much for the time, touching on a bunch of different topics, and I guess we'll see you at these upcoming games in Florida.
Okay, you got it. See you there.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to this week's edition of the Raiders Insider Podcast, and a very special thank you to Tom Flores, who took out time to go down memory lane and talk about the Raiders' glory days and look towards the future of a franchise that is coming out of a very dark period. If you like this podcast and want to subscribe to it, you can do so on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Thank you very much, and we'll talk to you next week.
The Raiders Insider Podcast on CSNCalifornia.com.